The remainder of Canterbury, Westland, Fiordland, Otago and Southland becoming fine. Chatham Islands fine this morning but cloudier with a few showers from afternoon. It's 6 minutes past 11 and you're listening to RNZ National. Headlines at half past. News and weather again at midday.
Ngā mihi, Nicola, coming up before midday on 9 to noon. Bill Mackay of the School of Architecture at Auckland University is here about 11:45, looking at the forthcoming planning rule changes again. About 11:30, the two Raw sisters, Margot and Rosa Flanagan, are back with us. A new book focused solely on salads, but goodness, just about every iteration thereof. And our political commentators this morning are Neil Jones and Bridget Morton. Kia ora koroa.
Morena.
Morning.
Neil was Chief of Staff to the then Labor leader Jacinda Ardern and prior to that Chief of Staff to the then leader Andrew Little. He is Director of Capital Government Relations. Bridget Morton's a Director with public and commercial law firm Franks and Ogilvie and a former Senior Ministerial Advisor to the previous National-led government. Okay. Behind closed doors since last week's dramas, we've been undoubtedly having phone calls as much as anything to try and sort out the next leader and possibly to do so before tomorrow's caucus. Bridget, how is it tracking?
Look, I think it's tracking really well, mostly by this radio silence. You know, it's actually showing that the party has learned and that individual MPs have really learned that they will not be rewarded for leaking. They won't be rewarded for, you know, playing the games out externally. And I think that was particularly, you know, relevant on Saturday when we saw, you know, news of a new variant of COVID. I think if National had been seen to be dominating the news on Saturday, you know, talking about themselves when something much more serious was happening in the news, it would have reflected even worse on a party. Possibly, you know, could they go even lower than Wednesday night?
Pundits are having a go at trying to keep their finger on the pulse. Luxon slightly ahead was the latest I heard, and Luxon definitely in was one of the latest that I've heard. Very hard to get accurate details of this kind of process. Are you any the wiser, Bridget?
I think what is really we're showing to be happening is the fact that it's not just a sort of two horse race in terms of who the leader is. What actually is happening is that there's a lot of discussion about happening about that leadership team and about how mending some of those sort of broken fractions that sort of happened between certain groups within the party and how, you know, a leadership team is going to bring that together. And I think that's why one of the reasons, you know, often in the leadership debate, it's all about just who's going to be the leader. The party has to build so much from the inside that they actually have to look at who's going to be that wider leadership team, not just the deputy, but your finance, who's COVID, who's health, all of those things.
True. However, that top job is pivotal and will often affect how that coming together works or doesn't. Were Luxon to be picked as the new thing, the thing without baggage, could you envisage Bridges working as his deputy? Bill English did this. Bill English negotiated both deputy and finance in the deal he did with John Key. But that was a different situation, and that was a more experienced person in the form of Key than we've got here. Could you envisage Bridges being his deputy?
I could envision him being the deputy. I think he's absolutely got, you know, a lot of the strengths that are Luxon's weaknesses. You know, there's a balance there. But I think the party is going to be concerned perhaps that these both those, you know, two men that come from, you know, up in North Island that are sitting more to the sort of conservative side of politics, and whether or not that's going to reflect, you know, the actual team that they need going forward to show a little bit more diversity, a little bit more, you know, spreading of views, you know, that broad church that National's always promoted. I think that's going to be their difficulty. It's not going to be, you know, the election billboard that they perhaps want in 2 years' time.
So if should Luxon prevail, then Bridges perhaps for finance, but do you end up with another wounded soul in National's caucus?
Well, I think one of the things that's really clear is that there's going to be a really low tolerance for people that are going to sort of undermine the decision of Tuesday. You know, if they'd rushed, I think, on Thursday to a new leadership, if they had, you know, had a lot of public, you know, discussions over the last 3 or 4 days, I would be concerned coming out of tomorrow's caucus that there would be that potential for, you know, that sort of wounded soul, you know, a backgrounding briefing against the leader kind of behaviour to continue. But it does seem like they're really trying hard to come to a consensus model, and that consensus model, you know, is the one thing that they actually really need, because they can't go any lower in the polls without basically just destroying the party.
So last question to you, Bridget. Does Bridges prevail on the basis of his greater experience and being a more known factor?
Look, I think those two things also, you know, count against him, because, you know, undoubtedly, and I do have sympathy for him, the last week and Colin's actions have smeared against him. And also she does still command some votes. So, you know, she's going to move those votes. It's very clear she's not going to allow those to go to Simon. So it's going to be really hard for him to, I think, you know, he's kind of put on the back foot from last week's activities, which is possibly what Judith really wanted. So I'm not sure whether he can prevail on that basis, and I think he would have to work really hard over the next couple of months to rebuild, you know, this the portrait, or the, you know, the image of who Simon Bridges is.
On the leadership question, Neil, how do you think it's going to go?
Well, I mean, how it was going to go, and you remember a couple of weeks ago when I was last on here, I was talking about how Bridges was quietly building the numbers for a challenge. He appeared to have the numbers. He was building a broad coalition that included Luxon, hoping for a tidy transition in the new year. And that was probably going to be the best thing for the party. The vote of no confidence in Collins created a vacancy, and that actually changed the numbers. And so suddenly Collins' votes are in play in a Bridges-Luxon race. And Luxon appears to have secured Collins' votes based on promises, which has put him slightly ahead in the race heading into tomorrow. That does create a bit of an issue, I think, for National. They're going to have to come together, I think, Bridges and Luxon, and hammer out some sort of deal that means it doesn't go to a vote and it doesn't get messy. And ideally, you don't want, as leader, to be installed with Collins's votes. I think that's not a great start. I think the new leader needs to distance the party from Collins, possibly even expel her from the caucus for her behaviour. And so I think that the key thing is going to be them coming together. In terms of how it shakes out, I think there'll be a couple of things National will be thinking about. Bridges obviously comes battle-hardened and no doubt has learned a thing or two from his last outing as leader, but he still does have incredibly bad personal ratings. And I think, you know, there is a risk they look like they're just sort of recycling the same old leaders. Luxon does give them that opportunity to break from the National Party's psychodrama, present a new face. You know, I think that's tempting to National, but there is a lot of risk. There's a reason leaders of the opposition who are successful and become prime ministers tend to have had some experience in politics. And, you know, leader of the opposition is called the worst job in politics for a reason. It is a trial by fire. There is a pressure and level of scrutiny that is beyond intense, and it's not something any job outside of parliament can prepare you for. I think the other thing about Luxon is he has struggled to make a mark in his portfolios. I can't think of anyone in modern memory who has come in with such high hopes and made such little impact. And I think he is also, you know, when he has had outings, particularly around his faith and what impact that might have on his politics, he hasn't really been able to square that off.
Yeah.
There's a simple story people say that he's the new John Key. John Key was good at business. Chris Luxon was good at business. They must be, you know, he must be the new Key. What they forget is that John Key was the most talented political leader, you know, politician we've had in a generation. He was actually a brilliant politician, and Luxon hasn't shown that yet, and they're very different skills.
One observation, Bridget. Part of the thing with Collins was he never got a look in. he was given low-profile portfolios. But do you want to speak to this issue that's going to be raised about his faith? Because I think you're hearing from Neil the attack line that will be used.
Yeah, and it's one that I find that's quite unusual, and it mostly comes from the left. It's not really, I think, a discussion point within the right or even really within swing voters. I think, you know, for most people, you know, for the large part, you know, in 3 weeks' time, the whole country is going to stop for Christmas. So people do have and respect and do have some positivity around, you know, values and expression of values. There's always a concern, I think, if anyone has, you know, spoken of any strong with those ahead of what is best for the country when making legislative or regulatory decisions. There's been nothing demonstrated, I don't think, from Chris Luxon that he's going to do that. It does seem he's going to be much more of a Bill English, you know, model where it's part of his, you know, who he is, and but he doesn't, you know, ride on that, and that's not the thing that he sort of puts out there front and centre. So I think it's a little bit of an assertion, I think, from the Beltway and from the left about the sort of religious aspect that I don't think really rides through for other people. I think also with Chris Luxon too, he was aware when he came in that one of the major concerns was going to be that he was going to be seen as undermining the leader because he was, you know, the new John Key. So, you know, I've heard from multiple media sources that he has refused to do profile pieces. He's refused to do interview pieces because he doesn't want to see that as undermining the caucus. And to me, that's a good sign of someone that is a team player, particularly in the state that the party is in at the moment, rather than distracting from his performance.
His problem is he's only had a year in Parliament. And his, you know, if you were designing this guy's career, you would say, take the finance portfolio, which is the most comprehensive of any, and learn everything about government, and then make your run for leader. And the question is, Bridget, whether he's going to be pushed into or whether his ego is going to push him into a different decision.
Well, I don't think you get to choose necessarily your time in politics. You've got to take the opportunities as they come up and you've got to be as ready as you possibly can be. I don't think, you know, there's so limited chances to become a leader of the party. There's only...
They're quite frequent at the moment.
Possibly more frequent than normal, that is true. But it's still quite limited, though, compared to how many people actually go in as MPs. You know, so I don't think the chance is there, I think you have to grab it.
It's funny, though. It's a sort of an aspect of modern politics that it's all about a person's ambition to be prime minister. Actually, you're there to serve the country. Sorry to bring this up. In incredibly complex times, and you have a responsibility for that to be your priority, but also where your skill set is at. And when you look at the trajectory of someone like Helen Clark to Prime Minister and compare it to what's happening now, there's a bit of a difference, isn't there? Nonetheless, this is the situation they're in. Back to you, Neil, you wanted to pick up.
Yeah, look, I just wanted to come back on the issue of Luxon and his faith. Look, I don't think New Zealanders are anything but fair-minded when it comes to someone's faith. I think the issue Luxon has is he's fumbled that issue. That's the point I was making. When he has talked in the media about it, he hasn't managed to cover it off. And I think, you know, there were some decisions such as his, you know, there was a vote about a year ago, I think, on safe spaces outside abortion clinics. So when a woman is going to get an abortion, meaning that she's not going to be abused by bigots as she walks into an abortion centre, even a number of Conservative National MPs thought, you know, that's a step too far. We're going to vote in support of safe spaces. Luxon was one of only 15 MPs out of 120 who decided to vote to continue to allow that vile abuse to carry on. You know, can I just say that? I think it's important for a reason, because it was a sign of his political judgment. If he was looking at becoming leader and he was aware this was something that, you know, this was a risk for him, surely your vote on that would be, I'm going to vote for safe spaces. I just think he hasn't shown dexterity, and this is going to be a risk for him.
Let's finish this thought because we've got other topics. But, Bridget, I do think that's a relevant thought because we do know that National has this famous Broadchurch, actually has a quite distinctive conservative and faith-focused faction, for want of a better word. And it has a liberal faction as well. And they have had crisis over this. They had crises over this with the gay conversion therapy stuff. There was talk about needing to somehow bring together these two different perspectives. Now, the new leader is going to have to do that and may quite quickly have to confront how they're going to do that.
Yeah, and that comes back to my original point, is that one of the things that I think that we're not seeing here is this sort of two-horse race about who the leadership is because actually the most important work is actually about who that leadership grouping is and how they make those decisions on a more sort of consensus sort of basis and making sure that it is reflective of the party and that there can be conscious decisions, for instance, when, you know, that's appropriate and all that kind of side of it. So I think there is absolute repair that had to be done, and I think that's what we're going to see by seeing who those sort of top five or sort of top 10 are tomorrow.
All right. Let's move on and have a look at some of the other events of last week. You couldn't have picked it, could you? That while this whole immolation is happening, the Speaker of the House is criticising the government whose party he belongs to over the way it passed the traffic light legislation. It is absolute bread and butter for an opposition. However, they were busy off doing what they were doing. Pretty rare I'm struggling to think of a precedent for this kind of direct criticism over the passing of law, Neil.
Yeah, and I mean, it was, I was going to say, it was a week that should have been Nationals. Had it not been for Colin's remarkable self-implosion, this should have been a week where the government was under real pressure. It wasn't just the Speaker. There were, you know, human rights people. There was Amnesty came out criticising them. I think the reality is there is a vanishingly small number of people who care about sort of the sort of process stuff, but it is important, and I think Labor could have handled it better. You know, these things have to be done quickly sometimes in a pandemic environment, but I think they could have avoided a lot of drama if they just sort of spread it out over a few days, given a very small window for submissions, and maybe, you know, avoided some of that criticism that they got.
Bridget, I know you'll have thoughts on this.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I do care about the process. I am one of those, you know, legislative geeks that think it is really important to have the process. And I think one of the key things, and I think this is where, you know, the general populace who doesn't care about the process, where it's going to really come onto them, is that one of the key things that happens, and I think every select committee process, is you find some errors in the bill. You find some things that need to be corrected because they don't work the way that they were intended to, because people bring submissions and goes, hold on, you know, this is not going to help. We've got this unfortunate situation where we've basically got two more sitting weeks and then they go into the summer break and don't come back till February. During that time, this piece of legislation is going to govern how people are restricted from activities. And it's also going to open up to a million different disputes, you know, for employees, for employers, for retailers, people running events, all of that kind of side of it. If there's a problem with the bill, we're going to have this enormous problem that the government is not going to actually be able to react, you know, to, you know, possibly a new variant coming into the country and the Auckland boundary coming away. And we're going to have this insufficient legislation. I think, you know, there is no excuse for Labor's, you know, I don't know what actually we call it, arrogance, ignorance, whatever it was. They had 5 weeks since they announced, you know, their pretty colourful A3. They absolutely could have got the drafting instructions out there. The second part of it that also really frustrates me is the complete lack of transparency on this. I understand that the papers and all the briefings and all the information that sit behind these decisions won't be released until late January. There is absolutely no reason or excuse for that. I have been in government where we've done massive proactive releases at the same time that we've made the policy announcement. There is no reason why they could not do that here.
I would just think, you know, to give some perspective, though, I think we should note the key elements have been in the public domain for some time. So it's not as if this has come out of nowhere. And businesses and workers, you know, the CTU, Business New Zealand, other stakeholders have been consulted. There have been some changes made due to that feedback, I understand. And there will be regulations that flow out of this that can be amended at pretty short notice and that will go through the Regulations Review Committee. So, you know, I think we need to have a little bit of perspective here as well. It's not as if it's come in the dead of night and no one knew what it was and now it's locked away for months.
The perspective here, Neil, though, is that the traffic light system announcement was made, and I think there was a poll, it was only about 10 days ago, that said 2/3 of people didn't understand the traffic light system. So they haven't even got the communications right, so people actually understanding what the restrictions will be, you know, from later on this week. And they also haven't even got the legislation aired out there. So I don't think there's actually, you know, if you take perspective into account, I actually don't think the perspective makes them look any better. It actually makes them look worse.
I don't think a select committee process is going to improve public understanding of how the traffic light system works. I mean, that's been out there. I think any change to a system from alert level to traffic lights is going to be confusing at first. You know, if you ask me right now a pop quiz how the traffic light system worked, I'd be a bit confused myself. But I think the reality is you get used to it as we get into it.
It's the principle, and I talked about precedent. The other time that the Speaker had a go was the way Labor MPs were running select committees and their majority on select committees. We've also got the situation with these sweeping housing laws. Again, 3 weeks, and, you know, professional people with serious commitments, but also who really care about the stuff, are burning the midnight oil trying to make submissions. There is a pattern of behaviour emerging here as to how the government treats the parliamentary process.
Yeah, and I think the criticism of the last few days, I think, should give Labor reason to reflect on how they manage this. And I would like to think next time something like this came up, they would go through a bit more of a proper process, even if truncated.
Okay. Just finally, we did see some more Official Information Act releases last week. Again, this would have been opportunity, you would have thought, for an opposition. Bridget, good on the government, frankly, for setting up these independent advisory groups like the Sir Brian Roche Group and for receiving and releasing the advice, although that's the legal obligation to do so under the law, Official Information Act. But what did you learn, and was it another missed opportunity for National last week?
Oh, an absolute missed opportunity for National. I think, you know, there's incredible frustration by the fact that a lot of these issues didn't get aired in the way that they should. But sort of moving on from that, though, I think, you know, what we saw from the OIAs last week is, first of all, that the government doesn't always follow, you know, scientific and health advice and that expert advice that they say that's what they're doing. And I don't think that that is necessary in itself a bad thing, because obviously we elect politicians to also take into consideration, you know, social constraints and political constraints, all those other things that need to be taken into account. But the government shouldn't be saying that. They shouldn't be saying that we always just follow directly to the health advice. Second of all, I think it really showed and demonstrated that, you know, all of this commentary that we've all been saying that they have been massively delayed, that they have not, you know, done the rollout well, that they haven't engaged in Māori and Pacifica, that they didn't react well and think about what the consequences were of outbreaks happening in transitional housing. All of that kind of stuff has been proven right by this independent panel. So I can see why they were a bit delayed in releasing this, because clearly this, you know, told the opposition and told a lot of media and people out there that absolutely they were right in their criticism.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think it's important to recognise Brian Roche and his committee were appointed as a permanent reviewer precisely to identify these sorts of issues and recommend how to improve the system. And the criticisms Roche raised are all legitimate and valuable. Some of it has been addressed in recent months, like the Viral announcement on rapid antigen testing and the Māori vaccination fund. But look, I think the criticism on this is more of the Ministry of Health than the government. There has been, you know, a lot of these problems have been due to the long-running conservatism and bureaucracy within the Ministry of Health. And if you look at Roche's recommendations, one of the key recommendations was to create a new COVID agency outside of the ministry and to manage the response. And Roche has been making this recommendation for a while. I tend to agree with him. I don't understand why the government hasn't done it. I think they should set up a new agency outside of the ministry, and they should put Brian Roche in charge of it.
He's been recommending
it
for
ministers
over a year.
Involved here, though.
He's been recommending it for
yes,
over
there
a
are,
year. Go ahead, Bridge. Oh, sorry.
What I'm saying, there's two ministers that are involved here, two senior ministers, Andrew Little and Chris Hipkins. And I think it's absolutely ridiculous to say that the Roche report came out and said the Ministry of Health has been failing. So the Ministry of Health has been failing. There's two ministers that are responsible for making sure that they're delivering. So it's absolutely on them to make sure that happens.
And that's why they set up the Roche group to report to them where the ministry was failing. And they've been implementing his recommendations. Where I think they should implement a recommendation is to actually recognise the Ministry of Health has failed in a number of areas, continues to fail in a number of areas, and set up a new agency that perhaps has a bit more focus.
Okay, last word, Bridget. Your pick for tomorrow, well, first, will it be tomorrow that it's decided? And then second, who's leader, who's deputy?
Oh, see, this is tough. I think definitely it will be decided tomorrow, without a doubt. My probably pick is that there won't be a vote. I think it's looking more like consensus. In terms of who will be lead, I think it's Luxon, but in terms of deputy, I think it's wide open.
So it could be Erica Stanton, it could be a Nicola Willis, it could be...
Simon Bridges, Chris Bishop, an unknown candidate that we haven't even discussed yet. I think all options are almost on the table.
And finance?
Well, I think that comes down to almost who gets deputy, because then it'll be who ends up in finance. You know, if Bridges doesn't get deputy, probably will get finance.
Final comment, many, many listeners calling for Shane Retty in the midst of this, the calm sort of handling of the situation. Does he have any interest in it, and would he be seen to have the whole suite of skills required, some of which are, you know, are interesting skills?
I don't think there's any prospect of him becoming leader. He is absolutely, you know, well-intended, high values, you know, hard-working MP, you know, that has deserving of having a senior portfolio. But for the leader, you have to be quite loud. You have to be quite, you know, you've got to have quite a lot of grit. You've got to have, you know, quite a little bit of mongrel in you, particularly to be leader of the opposition. And I just don't think that that side of him is evident. And I think to push him into that space would actually be detrimental to him.
Do you want to have a go, Neil, for your leader and deputy?
Wouldn't dare.
Okay. Thanks both. Neil Jones, Bridget Morton.